June 19th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Apple Podcast. And if you're an Apple Podcast or on Spotify, please leave a rating and a review. It's out tremendously. We're also an online radio. You can listen to us 24/7. Visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also on Twitter, thesportscast1. And check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. Last night, USA has beat Canada 2-0 to win their second consecutive Nations League. And it feels like USA is in a huge renaissance. Mexico's going downhill. USA is on the incline. And join us all the way from Connecticut, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to The Sportscast.
Hey, Santi. Thanks for having me.
Hal, it's been a week. We got a lot to talk about. We'll get to NBA soon. Get our little recap of what he thought about the Nuggets beating the Heat and getting their first championship. But let's first start with the USA-Canada game. It was not close. It was two first half goals by Christopher Richards, which we talked about this guy before, and Ricardo Pepi. The newcomer, Fallarin, who has made his debut as a starter, scored. Your thoughts over yesterday's big win against our neighbors up north?
Well, it was a huge win for the squad. They are definitely the best team in CONCACAF right now. Canada had a claim to that because they did play very well during qualifying, and they played very well at the World Cup, really, and got nothing from it. They impressed. But great young team, and they had a full roster. No holds barred up there, and the U.S. beat them soundly and without McKennie, without one of their stoppers, Miles Robinson, without who else got kicked out of that game? Serginio Dest, who was great in the semifinal, and someone else was hurt, so they had four different picks, and they showed this team has incredible depth. But Ballo, what a finish from this guy who plays at Rennes in the league in Ligue 1 in France. Property of Arsenal, declared for the U.S. Only this spring. Started the semifinal, was a little ineffectual. He was asked to do a lot of back-to-goal sort of striking number nine work. Did fine, but he's not a huge guy. He gets in the channels, and boy, he finishes. That was just clinical. No second touch. Positioned the body between the defender and the ball. First touch, it's in the back of the net. It was impressive.
Yeah, quite impressive. This player, probably the clear number nine. I don't want to say clear number nine yet. I'm going to say our first pick for number nine. Of course, you got Pepi and other players in this roster. With both goals, Hal, it was assisted by a guy named Gio Reyna, who bleached his hair last night. And obviously, you know, a couple of days before, Berhalter got hired. So, Gio Reyna, he's going to be around for a while.
The most impressive thing about the performance last night was just how seamless this group with four new faces took it to the Canadians, and you know, compared to our top choice team, you know, from the semifinal. That's the first thing. But Reyna was great, and the midfield situation was really fascinating, and if you're a US soccer fan, hugely heartening. Reyna played at the top of a triangle, slightly ahead of Luca De La Torre from Celta Vigo. And then behind those two was Yunus Musah, who I think we'd agree is a much more capable forward-going midfielder than Tyler Adams, who normally plays in the back, and Wes McKennie, who was red-carded in the semifinal. McKennie also can play that deep-lying defensive midfielder role, the number five. A lot of the time, number six. And Musah did very well. And when I first saw the team, I was impressed because BJ Callahan, the interim coach, obviously is playing a forward-looking game with Reyna and De La Torre on top of a triangle as opposed to spinning it and having two guys at the bottom of the triangle playing defense, which they have done, especially with Kellen Acosta. So anyway, hugely influential game from Reyna. He didn't just serve the ball well. He possessed it. He switched fields. He was always a person in possession, as well as he has played for Dortmund. He has always played a not an out-and-out striking role. It was often a winger role. This was spotlight, highlight, focus, center. You know, he was the center of attention for our offense, and he delivered time and time again. But, you know, a lot of guys did. Everyone wanted the ball at their feet, and they all did good things with it. This team breaks people down. We've never had a midfield that did that. All we ever had was a midfield that could run and get rid of the ball as fast as they could. This group is different.
This group is very different. Pulisic, before the game, he said, guys, we're not underdogs anymore. We are the favorite. We are the top of the CONCACAF right now. And he had a great weekend. I mean, I forgot about Chelsea when I saw him play. He had assists. He was running around the whole field. It was a very mature Pulisic. He was captain, too, this weekend. So it wasn't, obviously, with Adams because he's injured. He's out. But, I mean, whatever his club situation is, I know AC Milan has been ringing, but Pulisic is the star, the front man of this team.
And, you know, long may he, you know, reign. He's a great player. He takes people on. People back away from him. I love watching seasoned defenders just backpedal. They don't want to jump at him. He's by him. He's too quick. You know, but you know, one of the things that you brought up is, you know, Pulisic is one of the guys that's sort of untouchable in this 11. And I think Tyler Adams will be as well when he's healthy. But you know, Ballo, you know, I like calling him Ballo, Florian Balogun.
I love it.
Ballo is obviously a quality striker, and God love him. Can't wait to play him again. Great goal. Pepe is also growing into a world-class striker. Completely different kind of number nine. You know, you don't have to have just one. People get hurt. People don't get released for friendlies. People don't produce. I mean, Pepe was given a chance. This is what I don't understand about soccer Twitter. Pepe was given every chance to play for the U.S. men's national team. He came out like a house of fire, scored, won the game against Honduras very early in the octagonal. Then he was worthless. He couldn't do anything. He was just in a bad way. It happens to strikers. So the idea that we have two number nine options now, that's great. The idea that someone's not going to play because someone else is in form, that's the way it goes. Welcome to, as Pulisic explained, the big time. We have depth now. That means not everyone's going to play. And that means Reyna might not play at some point, but he played well this weekend, and he showed he can play behind strikers, which is exactly the role we need him, because we don't really have a better option there.
Glad you brought that up about Pepe. I was listening to an interview with Brian Sciarretta. He's a writer, soccer writer, and he was on Sirius XM, and he was saying that he understood why Berhalter didn't chose him to go to the World Cup, because he wasn't performing much for his club or wasn't performing well. So it kind of made a lot of sense not to choose him for the World Cup. Obviously, it's always going to be debatable if he should have went or not. But it was quite interesting. We won the Nations League a few days ago on a Friday night. It was actually on Thursday. We found out that Berhalter is now going to be the coach till 2026. Yeah. He's back for another cycle, Hal. I don't remember if you're all thrilled about it, but I want to hear your take about Berhalter coming back, and I'll give my take as well if he deserves another round.
I'm no great fan of Berhalter. I thought that, you know, the only foot he put wrong, however, before or after the World Cup, was his indiscreet sort of airing of dirty laundry at that leadership conference. That was poor. Poor decision-making on his part. Otherwise, I understand completely the way he handled Reyna in Qatar. And I think it's come out that he, you know, was given very little choice in the matter. He was under a lot of pressure that we did not know about. But let's just stay on task. I would prefer have Berhalter to go somewhere else and coach in this cycle. I think that he has run his course with this group. I believe that he's done a great job, and we can get into the tactics of the things that he actually has done, because Pulisic and others have called it out. But that is the mitigating factor here. The players seem to want him. Now, I know, and they've had plenty of time to make that clear to the Federation over the course of months, because the investigation that they went through, I think, was pretty perfunctory. But obviously, the key players on this team, minus Reyna, minus Lincoln Steph, you know, Stephen, Zach Stephen, and maybe minus Ricardo Pepi, they like the guy. They seem to believe that he's the one who has made them the unit that they are. And I think there's a really strong argument for that. You may not like him. You may not like the way he sort of backhanded bounce passes the ball around. He's sort of a dork. I don't find him offensive, but he seems a bit dorky to me. I'm not going to get into the business with his wife in 1991. God help us all if we're judged on moments, in 1991, 40 years ago, 30 years ago at some bar. But look, I'm not excited about him coming back, but I am interested to see the players who are key to this team defending his position. And they believe that he is important to them. And that's probably enough for me. It's also far enough away from the 2026 World Cup that if things start to go badly, a change can be made. Funnily enough, I mean, that Thursday morning, this is the night of the semifinal between Mexico and the U.S., which we haven't even talked about. that news broke at halftime of that game. And that's very, very weird timing.
There was no coincidence.
Somebody wanted that out to either take Thunder away from the performance in the first half, which was stellar, or they wanted to throw a gum in the works, and sort of hurt the U.S., the Federation's sort of media stance at such a big moment in Vegas, at such a moment of triumph. That was very strange. But what I heard the morning of that semifinal was that Berhalter was being considered for Club America.
Yeah, he did confirm with that rumor at the press conference.
And I don't know anything about that. I don't read Spanish. I'm not able to keep tabs on that kind of thing. But I found it hilarious and ironic that he ends up getting publicly floated for Club America, and basically takes a job with Club America. I mean, the USMNT is Club America. It is our Club America. And at first I was like, wait, did people just get that wrong in translation, or were people confused? But I did think at one point that I was like, wow, if Berhalter actually got hired by Club America, that would be quite a coup for him. I think that would be a thumb in the eye of his critics, that a big club at Liga MX wants him. But now I don't even know whether they did.
He did confirm in the press conference that they had conversations, but I'm not sure how in depth.
What does it mean?
I don't know. As you brought up, so here's my take about Berhalter. I think the players wanted him back. I think that was probably a strong point that Matt Crocker, the new U.S. director for the U.S. men's national team, I think what I've heard is the players were voted for Berhalter to come back. Pulisic said it twice in two interviews already, that the consensus that the players want him back, not just him, but also other players. And like you were saying, the other players that probably don't want him back, maybe Pepi, maybe Gio, perhaps. So that was something huge. And I do think Jesse March was considered, because he was also – there was a leak. Well, not a leak. His agent that night of the match against Metricos, he tweeted, Jesse March will not be the U.S. coach. So I think Jesse March, my hunch was he was the first choice, and then something happened contractually, and then they just gave it to Berhalter.
I have no idea. I have no hunch like that, because it's just not clear to me, Santi, what went down. If we go back and pick up the little breadcrumbs, now we know why Anthony Hudson left when he did. I think it was clear to him at that point that Berhalter was coming back, that he would not be considered in a proper way. And he's like, I'm out of here. Hence, we get BJ Callahan coaching the CONCACAF Nations matches this week and weekend. So that makes sense. That fits together. So the Club America aspect of this, whether he was still be considered for that even after, the U.S. men's national team coach leaves, the interim coach leaves, because he thinks that Berhalter's coming back. It should have been a tell at that point. So one of the things that I find fascinating is that, I've never been a massive Twitter guy, but since publishing this book in July of 2022, You know, I'm paying a lot more attention to it. I'm on it more. I'm more aware of the American soccer, well, U.S. soccer Twitter is what they call it. It's just, you know, I don't even know how many people there are people, but for whatever reason, they're prepared to die on the hill of Greg Berhalter is a wife kicker and the worst coach ever. And we can't possibly move forward as a national team program with him. Well, you know what? The players don't agree with you. The Federation doesn't agree with you. I think most people who follow the team don't agree with you. So who are we not even agreeing with? A bunch of guys in their mom's basement, you know, saying Berhalter out over and over again. It's just, I'm going to be fascinated to see, you know, where those people go and what stance they take. But I will say that after, you know, after this performance, you know, under an interim manager, BJ Callahan deserves our praise for what is a very weird position, came through with flying colors. And, you know, if things don't go great with Berhalter when he starts taking the team over and playing some friendlies, there's a little pressure on him now. Because if BJ Callahan can come in and win with this team, you'd better be able to win with this team. And it's going to be pretty interesting going forward. I don't think it will stunt the group. I think that Berhalter has been shortchanged a pretty darn good amount for the amount of work that he did to create this team. We can talk about, you know, his tactics if you want and why I believe that to be true. It's a little bit in the weeds. You know, who knows what he's like personally? I don't know and I don't care. But geez, these people on Twitter seem to know intimately what he's like and they don't like him.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And there's a huge argument on why did the U.S., you know, wait 6 months to just rehire and go back to point A. Well, he was under investigation. And I heard back in the World Cup once it ended that Berhalter was most likely to come back.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for the investigation, we like he would have been coaching all these past couple of weeks or these past couple of months. So,
well, you know, he was being investigated.
Yeah.
There were serious allegations. He was at the center of a really messy situation with the Reinas and the Federation. He appears to have come through it quite well, smelling way more like a rose than anyone else. But it was never clear to me that he was coming back until they announced it at halftime of the semifinal against Mexico. Because that morning I had read that he was going to Club America. And I remember thinking to myself, well, good for him. That's a great pivot for Greg Berhalter. We're going to know whether Berhalter can coach if he goes to Club America and does well. And to go and coach in a Spanish language country and get wins in the country of your greatest rival, that would have been a boss move. I was looking forward to that, honestly.
Me too.
I had no clue that he was coming back. So I'm not in the know and don't claim to be in the know. But Anthony Hudson knew. He knew it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And he's now coaching for Oman. The only American coach that I remember from the top of my head that went to had an America to coach was Steve Sampson for Costa Rica back in 2004-08, somewhere around there.
And it went very badly.
Very badly, yeah. I remember it was not that good for them. And then they started hiring Colombian coaches afterwards. I think I remember that. All right. So USA-Mexico, you want to tap on that a little bit. It was 3-0, two goals by Pulisic, a goal by Pepe. This is a Pulisic MVP game for sure. Mm-hmm. Mexico, who got rid of their coach today, actually?
Did they?
Diego Coca. Yeah. Didn't give him a gold cup to recover. So it was a 3-0, it was overcoming. It felt like Mexico, just not what the old Mexico, not the scary Mexico we knew a few years back.
I don't want to minimize how well the U.S. played. They were under a lot of pressure. They were bringing new people into the team. They were playing without their best, arguably their best field player, Tyler Adams, does a ton of work to make everyone else's life a lot easier. But Mexico was terrible. They had nobody in midfield that wanted the ball at their feet, and that is very unusual. They usually boss possession against us. They couldn't do it. Their back line was terrible, and when Montes got thrown out in the second half, that was the third example of him just being skinned and embarrassed by you know, U.S. strikers and midfielders. They looked terrible. I can't remember the last time a Mexican team laid down like that as well. And then, of course, when that happens, you know, the Mexican crowd gets into it. And I'm not sure exactly what their thought process is with the puto chant and trying. And I'm sure if they're directing that kind of ambivalence toward their own team, I think that's part of it. They don't act that way when they're stringing passes together and making other teams look stupid. They do that when they're looking bad, when their team is getting whacked, and their team got whacked. I can't say I enjoyed it. I could not have enjoyed it more.
I agree. It was a very good game from the U.S. I don't remember last time, because we usually score two goals against Mexico and win it, but three goals, it's been a while.
Can I just say that I am in southeastern Connecticut because I'm celebrating the 50th birthday of a buddy of mine 8 years late. We're all 58 years old, and we're here gambling and playing a little golf and having some fun. And I put money on the final last night. And I did two bets. I bet on the U.S. to win, so I made some money there. And I bet on the U.S. and Canada to score at least three goals. The over and under was 2.5. I took the over. And there should have been so many freaking goals in that game last night that could have made it 3-0 or 2-1, frankly. And we couldn't get it done. I'm really pissed off when I see the 3-0 score from the semifinal. It just makes me think about the money that I left on the table here at Mohegan Sun Sportsbook. It was fun. We had a good time. But I just want to get that off my chest, because don't show me that optic anymore. I don't want to see those three goal performances from semifinals. That's where I don't have money now.
I will definitely turn off. Before we go into basketball, I'm going to review the roster. The roster is a little bit, they call it the B team, maybe B plus.
Right.
For optimistic people, goalkeepers, Sean Johnson, Slonina from Chelsea, young guy picked up, Matt Turner, defenders, DeJuan Jones, Aaron Long, Matt Miazga, Jalen Neal, Brian Reynolds, Miles Robinson, John Tokin, DeAndre Yedlin. Oh, he's back. Midfielders, Gianlo, Luca Busio, DeJordan Lavic, Adrian Morris, Christian Roldan, James Hans, Allen Sonora, forwards are Kate Cowell, Jesus Ferreira back, Julian Grisel, Jordan Mortens, Brandon Vasquez, and Alex Zandejas, one of the key stars of the team. Your thoughts on this roster for the Gold Cup?
I think it's fine. It's a bit of a bummer that the Gold Cup has become a B team event, but because the Nation League exists, that's why. They're not going to get those top players and their attention so soon after the end of a season. If there's two events, they've chosen obviously to make the Nations League the priority, and the Mexicans, for example, have done the same thing. The Canadians have done the same thing. So that's just the way it is now. But moving past that, when I look at this team, I see a lot of really great young players who I can't wait to see in a central role. Jordi Mihajlović, for example. I want to see James Sands playing against decent competition for the U.S. This Sonora fella is obviously going to be a player. Love his game. I want to see Vasquez play with Ferreira. And it's a bit of a demotion for Ferreira, but he's just not warranted anything better than that. So it is what it is. What I don't have a feel for, Santi, I'm just going to be honest. I don't know the Mexican roster. I don't know the Costa Rican roster. I don't know whether they're also bringing comparably B-team talent to this tournament. I guess I hope so.
I heard Mexico from the three between USA, Canada, and also Costa Rica, Mexico is bringing the strongest squad, and the other squads like Canada and us, we're not bringing the A squad, but they have a stronger squad between us three.
What does that mean? I mean, are the people that played in the Nations League tournament, are they also playing the Gold Cup?
That's a good question. I just don't know. Compare and contrast.
I throw myself on the mercy of the podcast court, because I just haven't done that research, and it would be difficult for me to go honestly and look at a team and say, oh, this is not the best league MX can provide. I know that Lozano did not play in the Nations League for Mexico, and I'm sure there are other stars, some of them perhaps European based, who did not participate in that tournament, but the U.S. Beat them so roundly. I don't think it matters. It's a win-win for the American, national team program for these reasons. One is we're vetting a whole nother sort of generation of young talent. and, you know, maybe they can move up into, you know, a supporting role for, you know, 2026, or maybe they break out and become irresistible. So this is good for that. And I want them to play against comparable talent from Mexico. Part of me does. And the other part of me doesn't. The other part of me wants Mexico to throw their best team out there, because that's going to do the most for Gianluca Busio and Christian Roldan and this Gressel fellow who's supposed to be very good. I don't know enough about them. I want to see them against good competition. I'm glad to see Miles Robinson is in this team, because although he was hurt for the final and maybe he's not going to play, I do think he the fellow from Bayern Munich who scored the goal in the semifinal or in the final, Chris
Richards.
Thank you.
And plays for Crystal Palace, I believe.
Sorry about that. I think that's our pairing of the future. And
yeah, that's what everyone's saying.
Yeah. And you know, I've been saying it for a year and a half, and everyone's like, whoa, Richards is not playing. Look, he's the property of Bayern Munich. And for whatever reason, he's not getting time at Crystal Palace, who doesn't know what the hell they're doing and have gone through three coaches. This kid is a player. He's been hurt. He's going to be decent. And you know what? He even made Zimmerman look good beside him.
Yeah. No, Chris Richards, fantastic player, promising talent, you know, and he is the CB. Also, Miles Robinson. Those are the two pairings that everyone's saying that is the golden CB back end. So the first match is this Saturday versus Jamaica. That's not going to be an easy match. Jamaica, you know, brings their A game for the Gold Cups. I from proper. Haven't won it yet, but I know that day might come eventually for Jamaica. But before we go into predictions, let's go into what happened this past week. Denver Nuggets won their first NBA championship. They beat the Heat in five games. Fantastic win by Nuggets. It was not even close. Only game two was close. But Hal, give us your quick recap on this amazing run.
Well, they proved irresistible. Once they were tied up by the Suns in the second round, that series was at 2-2. I think they went 10-1. That's pretty awesome. Maybe even 11-1. I don't know my figures there. Look, they're the best team in basketball this year. I don't think there's any question about it. And let's be honest. When these playoffs started, we thought there were 7 or 8 teams that were as good as Denver. That was wrong. This is the best team in basketball this year. They've showed it. What's interesting to me is, you know, how did they get here? I wrote about this at halphillips.net this week. Check it out. I did some digging. Denver has 20 active players that have been drafted by the franchise that are still active in the NBA. 22, if you count the two guys that are on the bench for the Nuggets and don't really play. They were obviously draft picks of the team. That's an extraordinary record. And when I put that together, I said, well, okay, what are the other good teams that are known for drafting, you know, well? Well, the Spurs jumped into my head immediately. You know how many guys they have that they drafted since 2014, or actually 2013, who are still in the league? 9.
Wow.
9. Half. This is how Denver made itself good. They drafted Jokic at number 41. There's no lottery picks. Jamal Murray was a number 7, technically not a lottery pick. Those are the highest picks that they had, you know, since 2013. And they don't sit around and tank for the lottery placement. They don't believe in that. What they do believe in is identifying talent. And they do it better than anybody in the NBA. And I'm not just saying that because they won an NBA championship. I'm saying it because I play fantasy basketball and their roster is routinely overstuffed with guys who can play, and they end up having to trade them away because they can't afford to pay them or play them. And I could give you, you know, a bunch of names: Monty Morris, Bol Bol, Bones Highland. These are all guys who are making a name in the NBA. You know, even though they came through Denver, Torrey Craig, Will Barton, Jared Vanderbilt, Nurkic. They had Nurkic and Jokic. These guys know how to identify talent, and it doesn't mean you're going to win the NBA championship, but it means you're going to have a roster that you can pick from, and you can use the guys that you don't need to leverage yourself into other picks down the road. They've just done it better than anyone, and they're going to be just as good next year because they're not, you know, trying to hit it in a home run with, a top 6 draft pick all the time. You know, never actually is when they do it. I think it's a real chastening. for all of us who follow basketball and think that the draft lottery is such a great way to build teams. Name me one team that has built itself into a championship contender via the lottery. I can't think of one.
I can't think of it either. We'll have to do more research or ask ChatGPT about it.
I will. ChatGPT might have some ideas, but look at Philadelphia. They mortgaged their future for years to get Embiid. Now look, they're good. Embiid is an outstanding player. I don't want to shit on Embiid because he won the MVP and Jokic didn't. Who cares? I mean, they're both very good for players. But look at how much better Denver is. Look at all these guys that they picked that aren't even on their team anymore. These guys just have a much better sense for who's going to be good and who will fit in their system and who won't. So let's trade them and get a draft pick for them. They are dominating in this way, and it's hard to imagine they won't be competitive for years to come because of it.
And did you know Jokic got picked during a Taco Bell commercial?
He got picked during a time. Oh, you mean they went away from the draft lottery and it was a Taco Bell commercial?
Correct. And no one saw him getting drafted live on television. Quite something. The Miami Heat, obviously, they had a great run, 8th seed. They made it all the way to the end, but could not win it. They had the opportunity to get Bradley Beal, Bradley Beal chose to go to Phoenix instead. Your thoughts on Beal going to Suns to join Kevin Durant and the rest of the squad?
Well, the Suns are going for it. I'll give them that. I don't know who's going to play point guard because Devin and Bradley Beal aren't point guards. They can handle
Chris
the ball.
Paul was part of that trade, so he's going to Washington.
Exactly. Chris Paul's gone to Washington, and I'm not sure that they'll sign him. I'm not sure he wants to play in Washington. Who knows? But I think it was a good move by Washington just getting out from under that contract. They really couldn't do anything until they did. I don't know. The Bradley Beal thing, I mean, his contract was famously one of the worst in the NBA. They just had – no one could, they couldn't get rid of it. They couldn't get rid of him. This is what happens in the max era. You make a mistake on a max contract, and you're screwed. And again, look at what Denver had done. Denver didn't make any mistake. They have two guys that are going to be max guys, and the rest of them are all pieces. And I sort of believe that the Heat have the same idea, but they don't draft like Denver does. They don't even pretend to. They pick up Jimmy buckets in free agency. That's, a lot of people want to go to Florida and play on a good team and not pay income tax. So they're always going to be able to lure people in. It was interesting to me during this playoffs how much discussion there was of team building. How much did we hear when talking about the Heat, how many undrafted players they had on their roster, not just on the roster, but playing big minutes. That's a team building discussion. It's like, why are they good at that? I mean, is that Spoelstra? Maybe a little bit, but someone brought those guys in. So, how do you build your roster? I mean, think of all the guys that they have. I mean, only Hero and Oladipo were really draftees of this team. Everyone else is sort of brought in as a free agent, or they're scrounged off a roster because Miami thinks that they're better than the Hornets thought Cody Martin was, for example. So I'm fascinated by these discussions because I think that the NBA draft lottery is hugely overrated in its sort of ability to deliver quality, championship quality, contender quality rosters. We don't know that it even really works in the modern NBA. Oklahoma City and Houston have, tremendous young rosters full of lottery picks and talent. Well, none of them have done anything yet, and we don't know if they ever will. It's going to be interesting to see Udoka down there in Houston. Will he be able to teach those kids how to play defense? Will they listen to him? We'll see.
See what happens. The draft is this Thursday, June 22nd. So we'll see who gets picked first. Obviously, the French player, Wemba, I think is his name. I forgot his name. Is favored to go to the Spurs. So we'll see how the Spurs does it with this star player.
Yeah, he'll go there, and I'm sure he'll be good. But he's a unicorn. He's an exception. Once you get past that first player, what does picking number four really mean? To your team, what gets me, Santi, is that anybody with half a brain looks at the NBA today and says, look how many young men are coming into this league who just aren't really ready to be NBA players. They're 18 or 19. Maybe they've been in college for a year, maybe not. What they certainly have been, most of them have been, in the AAU system where, frankly, they don't learn a lot of, nuance about basketball and how it's played. So when you draft a kid like that at 19 and you throw a ton of money at him for 3 years, I think the odds of that player turning into a rotation player or a star for your team in 3 years are getting lower and lower. I think the lottery value is just getting lower and lower. That's not good. That just says, well, why are we indulging in this? Why are we spending all this time studying Scoot Henderson? Maybe we should be studying the entire, breadth of what is available to us in, in a draft and in Europe, and pick better guys at 40 and 25 than mortgaging our future and tanking in order to get one of the top six picks. I just think it's a cautionary tale that is just writ ever more large with each passing year.
Only history will tell. That's all I can say. So we'll see what happens this week. Spurs is number one, so we'll see what happens there. Right. Well, there you have it. World of sports, we got going. We got the Nations League out of the way. Got the Gold Cup coming up.
Yeah.
Anything else before we enter? Before we head into predictions.
No, I think that about covers it. I'm bummed that the soccer season is pretty much over, and the Gold Cup will be fun. I thought it was fun when Berhalter again. Yeah. Won the Gold Cup with the U.S. a couple of years ago with a B team. We got to know a lot of guys. He vetted and blooded, if you will, a lot of players. And I guess someone else is going to be doing that. I don't think he's going to be in charge of this team during the Gold Cup.
He's going to start after the Gold Cup, Berhalter. So
yeah, I mean, it's just so weird.
I'm not sure why. Is it because I guess he needs time to prepare? I don't know.
I think BJ Callahan deserves a chance to show what he can do and maybe get himself a job somewhere else, or maybe get himself a job on Berhalter's staff. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they must have made some kind of commitment to him. He stepped in, of course, when Hudson said, I'm out of here. And I'm sure that BJ Callahan knew exactly what was going on kept his mouth shut and was a team player. And I hope he is rewarded for that. But I don't know. I don't think Berhalter cares about the Gold Cup. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. But, and back to your point about, like prospecting players, the Gold Cup we had 2 years ago, we had a good look of Matt Turner, and that got in the starting position for the World Cup.
Yeah. I guess, can you think of another one though? I can't offhand.
Yeah, for sure. Matt Turner was the one that stood out the most.
Yes. And, again, Zach Steffen, Gio Reyna, Ricardo Pepi. Those are the three guys who are, I think people are worried will, maybe not be that happy that Berhalter is back. But that's three out of 20 primary players in the player pool right now. And welcome to the big leagues, U.S. soccer fans. When you have a real national team, there's competition between players for positions. And someone's always pissed that they're not playing. Right. Because someone else is. So now they have to deal with a coach that maybe doesn't rate them like they'd like to be rated. Whoa. Well, when you only have 11 players, that's a problem. But we don't. We have 20 players now. We have 25 players. And there's going to be more and more of them. And they're not always going to be happy with the coach. They're not always going to be happy with their playing time. That's life. That's life at the international level. That's what makes it fascinating to watch. So yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a good tournament. I watched the tournament throughout. I did not wait till the second round. I watched it from the group stage and on. So, speaking of that, the first game is USA versus Japan. Give us a scoreline prediction there.
What, are we talking about the Women's World Cup now?
No, for the Gold Cup.
Is Japan in the Gold Cup?
Oh, no. Sorry, USA versus Jamaica.
Okay.
I'm thinking World Cup 2026. I'm predicting something here.
Hey, I think if Jamaica brings its A team and Miguel and Antonio is their striker, they may win that game. But again, so I'm going to pick Jamaica because why not? I love Jamaica.
Wow, it was a stunner. That would be a knock on the. I mean, yeah, that'd be a huge surprise if that happened.
Well, that's that. Is that another second group stage or is that a knockout game?
No, it's a group stage match. So yeah, it wouldn't like if we lose, we'll be okay. We just gotta win the other two games. So
something will happen. Maybe but his team's loaded. They got a lot of really good players in Dejas, obviously as a featured player. They want to get him time. That should be an interesting match. I'll watch that match as well. But so you're telling me that you saw the Martinique versus St. Lucia match the other night?
No, I did not watch completely. My bad. I watched from the group stage.
Oh, I see
the actual
tournament. So you don't want to see Curaçao against
Hey, I'd love to, but time is such an essence. I got to watch the NBA lottery. I mean, the NBA draft.
I will not be watching the lottery. Tell me what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Amba. And I'm trying to pull up the Jamaican roster, and I cannot seem to find it. So hopefully, actually, yes, Mikel Antonio will be there.
Good for him. Well,
he's a good player.
They're going to be that. I believe that he is the best single striker in CONCACAF. And yeah, if he's running around up top for Jamaica in this tournament, there's going to be some very wide-eyed defenders because that dude is big, strong, and clever.
West Ham.
Yeah.
And speaking of big players, Canada's Antonio Davies. I heard he might go to Madrid, I was hearing.
Oh, Alfonso Davies. I don't know.
Alfonso Davies, that's right.
I haven't heard anything like that. He's been, a starter for Bayern Munich. I mean, it's hard to do better than that, but why not? You can go and play with Jude Bellingham in Madrid.
Why not? Cool deal. So this week at 9:30 p.m. in Chicago at Soldier Field on June 24th, and then on July 2nd will be USA versus Trinidad Tobago. So we'll be playing them at St. Louis. I believe it's their first time going or hosting a Gold Cup.
Yeah, they've got all these brand new MLS stadia. They may as well put them to use. And of course, when the Gold Cup is done, we slide right into the Women's World Cup down in New Zealand and Australia. I think that's going to be fascinating. The U.S. is favored, but I think if I was here at the sports book, I'd put some money on the idea that I would take the field against the U.S. at this point. I think they're banged up and they're old, and I think the European game is catching up with them.
It is. Well, there you have it. We got a full Splash Sports on a Monday. It's kind of raining outside. I'm not sure how it is over there in Connecticut.
Gorgeous. But it's gorgeous day.
It's gorgeous. Hal Phillips, what is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about the U.S.
Well, you see my Twitter handle there below. Drop me a line. I write non-soccer things at halphillips.net. My new NBA column is up there. And my book, Generation Zero, published last July, coming up on a year. Still selling like gangbusters. Pick it up. If you're wondering why we care about soccer in this country after 100 years of not caring, then Generation Zero is the book for you. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pick one up. Pick six up.
Yeah, exactly. We have come a long way. Now U.S. coaches might be coaching in Mexico. That's going to happen in time. I've been hearing Jesse Marsh to coach Mexico. Don't quote me on that.
That would be fabulous.
I don't think that will ever happen.
Hey, they're wringing some serious hands in Mexico City now. They do not like it when the U.S. Wins. That display of theirs, we didn't really talk about the BS that crowd went through. And I thought that the team itself, the Mexican national team, were pathetic in the way they sort of just started. It was just amateurish display from a team getting beaten. It's like, just play better.
Exactly.
Spare us this drama and just play better.
Another rebuild for Mexico. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Twitter and Instagram. We'll be tweeting out throughout the week, and we'll be looking into the draft lottery. Alan has a show tomorrow, and he'll preview the lottery. He'll have a show on Wednesday, and he'll preview the lottery. I mean, the draft, NBA draft, not the lottery already happened. But anyways, that's all she wrote. Hal Phillips, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi. Cheers.
This was your update.